So, just as you're gathering back in your chairs, a couple of people asked me about Sion's chant that we played as we did our Oran Torah. They're not available on Amazon, I'm sorry. But they're available at a very wonderful place, which is the Sacred Art of Living. I think it's just sacredartofliving.com, the W in front of it. And within that website is the Tree of Life resources. And that's where you can order. Fionn has 3 CDs of the Fawn. This is the first one. So a Fawn is a chant and a Fawn. So that's great, as well as just, I mean, they have an incredible collection of Celtic books and even the prayer piece, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So now that we're back, I'm just so grateful with it, you, Tom, who managed to pull this little piece out of a longer teaching.
Bob did a lot of the editing.
That's just amazing. So this was out of a retreat that Fionn gave a couple of years ago to the first Kara group up in Oregon. And so, you know, I was so naive. I always thought psychology was sort of indulgence, and it was for people who had really severe problems, or else it was indulgence. And really, throughout, you know, my studies in Celtic spirituality, I have come to understand that really working on our psycho-spiritual journey is so very important, you know, this spark of the divine that has been, you know, projected out into the universe and then has landed as me in this point in time on this part of this beautiful planet has a reason to be here. And psychology and psycho-spiritual journey can really, really help us with tools that help us know exactly why we're here and what it is that the divine is calling us into. So, what we're going to watch now is Fionn, the storyteller, even the druidic storyteller. Celtic spirituality is a living oral tradition, and Fionn is a master.
I've spoken a great deal about the positive side in the tradition, the sense of moving towards the great mystery and bringing the great mystery back. But of course we all know that while we struggle and journey through Alfer, through the tangled forest of the other world, meeting all the otherworldly beings that come to us as energies in our life, the energy of grief, the energy of conflict, the energy of tragedy, the energy of challenge, the energy of, oh, if that person wasn't in my life, I would be perfect. If they just didn't exist, my life would be perfect. If I didn't have to do that thing today, my day would be perfect. All of these energies that come to us from Alta that challenge us. We need to find ways also to explore these energies, as we all here know. And the ancient Celts were astonishingly wise in this respect. Just to show you, I'm going to share a very short and very ancient Celtic legend with you. This is a legend you won't find in any published book. You'll only find it in one of the old Irish medieval manuscripts. As yet, it's never been translated out of the old Irish. It doesn't even exist anymore in the oral tradition, as far as I know, except I've been telling it now for a few years. I learned it from a professor of Celtic studies in Ireland, a wonderful man called John Carey. So, listen to this story. There was once a king in Ireland. And in ancient times, the kings in Ireland had to be perfect in every way, in all three worlds. They had to be perfect. They had to be perfect in form, perfect in wit, and perfect in spirit. And this king seemed to fit the bill. He'd been king for a long time. The land was thriving. His people were happy. He was indeed a handsome, wise, intelligent, and good man. But one day, the king, as was his wont, went down to the loch, down to the lake, where he would always pray. He knelt beside the waters of the lake, and his retinue, who always followed him, came with him, his warriors, his druids. They stood guard around him. And he knelt beside the edge of the water, and as he prayed to the gods of the lake, he looked deep into the water. And he saw the reflection of his beautiful face in the water. And then he became fascinated by the ripplings on the surface of the water. And there was a new kind of rippling coming from the far north, the cold, dark side of the lake. It moved across the water in a sort of V shape towards him. What could it be, he wondered. He moved closer and closer towards it, and it seemed to disappear under the water. The rippling stopped. He looked down into the water. There was his reflection. But as he looked more closely, his face seemed to be changing, seemed to be becoming awful, awful. Suddenly his face changed entirely. He was ugly. He was hideous. And he realized there was a face under the water looking up at him in horror. He recoiled. And the druids and the warriors ran down to see what was wrong. He screamed in horror. I saw the beast. I saw the beast, he said. The beast, the ancient Irish word from which I guess we get the English word beast. What does the beast look like? Horrible. The beast lives under the bottom of every loch. Legends in Scotland and Ireland say there's only one that's famous, and that's the Loch Ness Monster. But there's a beast in every loch, and the king had seen the beast. The warriors pulled him away from the water and concerned themselves around him. The druids came forward, and he turned round and looked at the druids. His face had changed. The beautiful king now had the face of the beast. The druids composed themselves, as druids are wont to do, until they could be in a huddle together to try and solve this conundrum. Perhaps they couldn't even tell the king. He was a good king after all. Even though in Crunia he is no longer beautiful, he could still be king. But the king won't allow himself to be king if he knows he's ugly. We'll hide all the mirrors, said the druids. So they walked back to the dun of the king, to the fort of the king. And they sent a runner ahead. Hide all the mirrors. The king must not know. And they prepared everyone and warned him how ugly the king would be. But they must act normal. They must act as if nothing is wrong. So the king returned to the dune. And all the bronze mirrors, all the shiny pieces of metal had all been covered or put away. And for 3 whole days, the whole community, the whole clan of the king, managed to keep this from him. Women would come to him in the morning and say, "Oh, my lord, You are too great to be shaving yourself with a mirror. Let me shave you. These two women would shave him every morning. The king enjoyed this new lifestyle. Until eventually, the king realized he hadn't been down to the loch for a while to pray. And the druid said, "Oh, no, no, don't go to the loch. Pray here. Go to the sacred grove. Pray there. Why would you want to go to the highly receptive loch? Don't go to the loch to pray." The king became suspicious, of course. And he began to notice the absence of shiny objects in his palace. And so one dusk he arose and he went to his wife's casket and he opened the casket and took out her beautiful bronze hand mirror and held it to his face. And he was horrified with what he saw. It was the face of the beast that he had seen in the loch. Furious, he ran to the house of the druids and asked them to explain why he hadn't been told what had happened. The druids said, "Well, what can we do? You're a good king." The king said, "I will kill this beast." And he ran down to the loch, a flurry of druids behind him. "No, you must not kill the beast. Whatever you do, you must not kill the beast," said the druids. The king went to the loch, took out his great sword, slashed at the water with his sword, with all of his fury, calling upon the beast. The V-shaped ripple came from the other side of the loch, towards the edge where the king stood, and disappeared under the water as it had done the last time. The king was too angry to wait. He strode into the water, dived into the water, and swam towards where the beast had gone under. The king too dived under the water to the horror of the druids. The water began to boil with the fighting, the king and the beast under the water. Every now and then a king leg would appear, a king arm would appear, a beast leg would appear, a beast arm would appear above the surface of the boiling, fighting water. Eventually the foaming, boiling water turned pink, turned red, and then there was stillness. A V-shape rippled and moved towards the edge of the loch where the druid stood, aghast. The king emerged from out of the water. He seemed unscathed. He was beautiful again. His face was perfect. He walked towards the edge of the loch and put one foot on the dry land and another foot on the dry land. And he said, "I have killed the beast. I have prevailed." And then the king fell down dead. And that's the end of the story.
So this is obviously the story about the shadow. One of the saints in the Celtic tradition is Saint Sinsen. And Saint Sinsen says, "May you have the commitment to heal what has hurt you, to allow it to come close to you, and in the end, become one with you." And so what I'd like to ask you to do is to take a couple of moments of silence and just let this story of the beast and Fitton's words have a little seat in your heart. And then if you have pen and paper, to maybe just write about what comes to you. And we'll do this just for about 4 or 5 minutes. Okay. Talk about being listened into voice, and putting pen to paper is a wonderful way of listening yourself into voice. So if you weren't able to do that now, maybe take some time later today. We can have these wonderful meditations and these wonderful dreams, but until they're put into voice, they don't really rest in our clay body. So you just experienced a master druid storyteller. So what bubbled up for you with this story?
What came to me was Beauty and the Beast. Just the Beast for wholeness.
Mm-hmm. So let's make sure we remember to stand up and face the group. So what came to Jimmy was Beauty and the Beast. Kiss the Beast for wholeness. Beautiful.
Well, last night I was at a meeting and I knew I had to give a presentation. There were a series of presentations, and while I was watching and hearing other presenters, I was becoming more and more restless and anxious. I hate to wait to speak. That's pretty obvious. I realized, hearing the story, that I was in mortal combat with my feelings of anxiety. I mean, that was the beast within me. And I was thinking to myself, go away, go away. And then I was thinking, people are going to see me. They're going to see how restless I am. I'm crossing my legs. I'm stretching out. I'm twisting and turning. And I don't want them to see me like that. And so that went on. I know about the idea of embracing the beast. And I probably even thought of that. And it just seemed too hard to do that. It seemed too uncomfortable, too stressful to make that move. And then, anyway, I didn't quite know how I would do it besides. But I can relate to that story.
The part that bothers us for me is how we manage to surround ourselves with people who tell us we're beautiful when really, you know, some ugliness is there. And as I stayed with the story around that, I thought, aha, it's been for me in the marriage where you get the mirror, you know, it was in his wife's. Go to the coffin of his wife to get the instrument. And for those of us who are married, we know that's the place where we have to meet truth.
There's no coincidence that the Jungian world loves the Celtic world. Jim.
I'll stand up. Question, after some of the books I've been reading, some of the things, I have this question I'm going to ask myself. How is my shadow self part of my being?
This story is perfectly timed with my own transformational journey. And this is what came from this. The beast has come out of the closet to walk with me throughout each day. It is my constant companion as I lead us on our way.
I think the power of story, part of the power of story, is that the soul is a shy animal. John O'Donohue says that. Parker Palmer says that. And if we try to come straight at the soul is going to hide and retreat. But when through story or poetry we can come aslant, as Emily Dickinson says, then we can open up and greet soul to soul. Thank you, that was beautiful.
Yeah. I kept thinking of Tom Heck's song, O'Healy River, because I was fascinated by the lock, by the lake, and how the king went to the lake to pray, and it was in the water that he was revealed, and that beast was revealed, and that more about him was revealed. And I thought, how, you know, we've been learning that the Celts, you know, revered water, and I've been thinking about this whole concept of where do I go where I'm revealed? You know, where's that spot? Is it, would it be at the water, or where is it that I really see myself? And I think Don's comment about marriage is a good one, but I'm thinking about the places where I would go where I could be revealed. I came to Santa Barbara to wait for a birth, to help a young woman give birth. This happened the other day. But I had no idea in my waiting that I would end up here. And I really, dear Lynn invited me today, and I realized that I've been with my shadow for quite a while. And I had the opportunity to give birth to my life while I'm here. And I just want to encourage all of us to be our light, because our world needs it so much.
Thank you.
David Rico has a great book on the shadow if you're interested in exploring and discovering and understanding your shadow.
It's Shadow Dance. Beautiful. Shadow Dance.
What was shocking to me in the story was the fact that when he turned around, the king turned around to face those two, the religion and the military, neither one told him the truth.
And who acts in concert with us to hide from us our shadow? And is that an act of soul friendship?
Well, this makes me wonder, on a theological standpoint, you know, something that's always bugged me in my theological upbringing is the sinless nature of Jesus. Where was his shadow? And all this talk of Jesus was the perfect, beautiful king. Jesus was sinless. You're taught that. How do we reconcile that as adults? You know, where would Jesus be if he truly was human?
Well, one of the things in Scripture that he did say is, don't call me good. There's none good but God.
What's just our own personal reflection?
I also wonder where the whole point of the temptation was to show that he had shadow.
Yeah.
What was the point of the whole point of the temptation, I think, was to show that he had a shadow.
Yeah.
What's the point of tempting someone who's perfect?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit more of the interchange and of Sion kind of the story. So we'll watch that for a couple minutes, okay?
In the tradition, we would say that our power resides in the Beisht. Mayanamkara had the most wonderful phrase for people who were always reaching for the light and ignoring their own inner darkness, not doing their shadow work, if you like. He called them forced rhubarb. when you want rhubarb to grow really quickly, you cover it so that it tries to find the light. So it's reaching up towards the light, and it becomes thin and spindly and long and weak, and its roots are only, you know, a couple of inches long. Forced rhubarb. We are all forced rhubarb if we indulge in this white light fascism, and if we do not engage with the Beisht. And there are conditions, if you like, that are laid out in the Anamkara relationship according to the person's own inner state, where they are in their journey. How are they in relationship to that Beisht? Are they still in denial about the existence of the Beisht? Are they trying to kill the Beisht like the king did, and thus cut themselves off from the very source of their power? Or are they running away from the Beisht? All the different relationships we can have with the Beisht. We deny it, we try to kill it, or we run away from it. And is there some way we can learn to receive wisdom from the Beisht that can transform us? And the tradition would say, sit at the side of the loch, in a place of openness, in a place of what we call kriye gwan, the pure heart, the empty heart, the open heart. Sit beside the loch and watch the surface of the loch. Watch for the ripples. Watch for clues. Study the Beisht like you study the habits of a wild animal or a bird. And how do you study the Beisht? Well, one of the ways you can do this is to feel for it in your own body. When you are angry with somebody, where do you feel it in your body? So the first thing you do, you cut yourself off entirely from what you're thinking. When you catch yourself being angry, step one, stop thinking. Stop analyzing your anger, stop justifying your anger, stop blaming the other person or thing for your anger. Drop all thoughts, go into your body. Where do you feel the anger? You might feel it in your gut. You might feel it in your shoulders. You might feel it in your head, a sore head. You might feel it somewhere else again. There's no right or wrong place where you feel your anger. Feel it in your body. Concentrate entirely on that feeling. Sit beside the loch. In this sense, your body is the loch, is the hollow in the world that contains the water of your unconscious in which the Beisht lurks. If you engage in a relationship with the physical manifestation of the Beisht, it's one way of being able to engage in a meaningful and profitable relationship with your shadow. If you drop the thoughts, you drop the thing that perpetuates its life. You feed the Beisht by thinking, oh, I did this because they did that, and if they hadn't done that, I wouldn't have done the other, and so on and so on. Justifying. A really powerful practice is to give up justifying altogether. Never justify anything you do ever again. If you're late for the office, don't explain why. Well, you might have to your boss, of course. Don't justify. Don't explain to people why you're perfect, really. It's just that life got in the way. That's what discipline is. Just try try dropping justifying and see what happens energetically in your body if you don't justify. Oh boy, will the fish want to break the surface of the waters. So engage in that. Come on, fishy. Let the fish break the surface of your waters. Feel where you feel it in your body. Feel how you were dying to say, it wasn't my fault, they made me do it. I'm perfect. It's just the world that's in trouble. Feel where you feel it in your body. Focus on that feeling in your body. Drop all thoughts. Keep on focusing on where you feel it in your body. Don't think anything. Just focus on the feeling. Without the thoughts to sustain the feeling will die away. In this practice, you have this simple practice. You have taken what many traditions will think of as the middle way, the third way, the middle road. You haven't denied, you haven't run away, not flight, not fight. You have taken some inscrutable third step. When you take this step, you acknowledge the existence of the beast in you, but you do not walk the way of the beast, you do not wear the face of the beast. And in so doing, you relieve from your clan the obligation that they will have had for forever to have coping mechanisms. In the story, the clan had to have coping mechanisms. How do they deal with the beast that is facing them in this person, the king, in every day? How do people in your lives cope with your beast that they will see far better than you? How do they cope? And wouldn't you like to relieve them of that? So take it into your body, where you feel it in your body. In the Celtic tradition, the masters of these hidden tricks, if you like, the esoteric arts, were called the salmon of wisdom. And they were called the salmon of wisdom because, like the salmon, they swim against the flow to get to the source. And the flow is the flow of everybody in life, the flow of your culture, the flow of the accepted norm. The salmon swims against that flow to get to the source. The flow would say deny the beast, justify the existence of the beast, project the beast onto somebody else, fight the beast. Many religions will tell you to kill the beast. The beast is the devil. The beast is the source of your wholeness, is your completion. If you focus on your body, you own the existence of that energy, and in some alchemical way that is beyond my understanding, you reclaim, limb by limb, the beast into your conscious self. With each observation of the movements of the beast in your body, you reclaim the beast into yourself.
I'm working very hard to get her to Santa Barbara. So hold that in your thoughts and intention and prayer. Because I think you're going to join her.
In my own experience, facing the beast and accepting that I am the beast has been very powerful for me. It's enabled me to go beyond what I ever thought I could go beyond. And coincidence is where God hides. And I have found I still have many beasts to face, believe me. But I have found in looking at it in a Jungian way is that my best qualities, the best thing about me, can also be the weakest thing about me if I overuse it. if I take it to extremes. So that's where, in my life, moderation is pervasive. That's where I hope that I come from most times. And when I do, I don't have to measure myself, because I read your face or your response. And the only thing I had a little trouble with this was, is that we should take on the beast. And I don't believe I should take on my shadow and make it part of me. All I have to do is own it and say that I am it. And then I can function, the beast can coexist. And I can coexist with the beast, and it works for me. It loses its power, and the power goes the other way.
And she talks, and the tradition talks about befriending the shadow, taming the shadow.
I would like to give you a piece of reference to this. Richard Rohr's latest book, Falling Upwards, talking about the two stages of life, he has a whole chapter on dealing with your shadow self. It'll give you a very good understanding of what we talked about this morning.
So some of you were asking her name. It's Fionn Tulla. And if you Google Fionn Tulla, you'll come to the Kaylee Day website out of Scotland, and you'll see some of the teachings and some information about it. There are four small communities, two in New England and two in the Pacific Northwest, who are coming into being around her teachings. That's where I traveled up to Oregon to study with her. So she, when she found, you know, this community, she found, you know, a handful, I don't know, maybe 40 people scattered across Ireland and Scotland in this tradition, and they were all in their 80s, and she thought, oh my gosh, this is going to die unless, you know, someone begins to lift it and bring it forward. And so that has been her work for the past 25 years. We're coming to the end, and I brought it for you. You may have noticed that Fionn was wearing a set of beads. And this is part of the old Celtic tradition, prayer beads. I mean, my goodness, we have our rosaries in the Christian tradition. We have prayer beads, our malas, in the Buddhist tradition. And we have our prayer beads in the Muslim tradition. And so it's one of those wonderful things that runs across our traditions. And the Celtic prayer bead, she would call it a pashtudin. You may hear it as a pashtudin. They're also available at the Sacred Art of Living. But it is 150 beads, and then there's a marker bead after 50, 50 more, a marker bead, and 50 again. And it's the 150 beads of the 150 songs, or the 150 beads of the 150 islands off of the coast of Ireland. And it says, with a very brief prayer, it's really essentially an inhalation and an exhalation. And one of the ones is Ahi, which is O thou being. Or another one is Er Mokri, which is to my heart. And so it is a beautiful walking meditation, an in-breath and out-breath, move to a bead, an in-breath and an out-breath. And again, it is related to those three circles. In the first 50 beads, we are praying and our intention is focused on our earth play life. And the next 50 beads is focused on the other world, the spirit world.
the world of spirit beings, and then the final 50 beings dropping into nothingness. So it's a lovely tradition. Before I got my costume in, I had a large muslin set of beads. That was 100 beads, because it was 99, the 99 names of God. So I just used that. And it was so there are wonderful, wonderful prayers within that tradition, and I encourage you to go to that website.
And what's it called again?
The website is, you can do Kaylee Day. Just Google Kaylee Day or Google Sion Tulak, and you'll find it very readily.
So I wanted to check. I found this in the library, Celtic Prayers for My Own by James Philip Newell. And they're day by day, and Monday through Saturday. Soon Sunday you'll be in church, I guess. This is very lovely and short and morning.
And these two little ones are also kind of more like a psalter with a morning, noon, and evening prayer. One is illustrated by beautiful Celtic Christian artwork, and the other by some Celtic Hebrew images, which that is just really marvelous. So I want to thank you all so much, and I want to end with a blessing by John and Doug. So just come to quiet for a moment. And rest in your clay temple. May you recognize in your life the presence, power, and light of your soul. May you realize that you are never alone, that your soul, in its brightness and belonging, connects you intimately with the rhythm of the universe. May you have respect for your own individuality and difference. May you realize that the shape of your soul is unique, that you have a special destiny here, that behind the facade of your life there is something beautiful, good, and eternal happening. And may you learn to see yourself with the same delight, pride, and expectation with which God sees you in every moment.